Did you know that 12% of the entire internet is porn? Soch mein pad gaye? Behtareen. That's kind of the point of this podcast. We want to make you think. Think about science, the world, and most importantly, your world, your body, and to make you laugh and give you the correct answers. Today's episode is all about the world of porn. We all watch it, some deny it, some accept it, but there is absolutely no denying that it shapes a lot of our understanding of our bodies and, of course, sex. But there is so much more to porn than what we see. It has a lot to do with our brains. And that's why today we have with us Dr. Sid Warrior, who is a neurologist, a podcaster, and an occasional gamer. He also makes some really fun videos that help you understand your brain better. So today we're going to ask him all about your brain on porn. Hi, Dr. Sid. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tanaya. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So, in a very professional note, I do want to ask you a little bit about your background, what kind of work you do, and then we'll talk a little bit about pornography because, of course, these go in the same line.
Of course, and I feel that my medical teachers would be so proud that I've spent 15 years in medical college, in MBBS, MD, DM, and here I am talking about porn. It feels like a wonderful defining moment, but I'm super happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I'm a neurologist. I'm practicing in Mumbai, and for the last 2 years since the pandemic, I've been creating some content around the brain and helping people understand what is happening in their heads.
That is fascinating. So actually, maybe a slightly more academic question, but do you watch porn?
Of course. As you said, in every person's life, right from school, college onwards, porn becomes a part of their life in some way or the other. Some watch it more, some watch it less. I was exposed to porn, I think, when I was in ninth standard. And at that time, it used to be much more difficult than it is now, because I remember there was this one guy in class who used to get CDs, and he was very popular. So he would get these special CDs, and then we used to share them. Like, okay, now that you're done watching, chalo abhi mujhe de de. So those used to be, you know, simpler times. Now the access to porn is so different.
Fantastic. Actually, now that you mentioned that school ka porn wala bhaiya, we used to have our own Kalin bhai in my class. This is pre-Mirzapur. But he used to come every day, hardest leke, teen hardest leke. Abhi iska ye wala dena hai, iska ye wala dena hai, iska ye choice hai, iska wo choice hai.
So he knows what everybody is into.
Like, super intimate secrets.
What did you used to call it, though, in school or in college? Did you call it porn or did you call it something else?
Gosh, I can't remember. What I do remember was that film had come out, Blue, that year when I was in class 11.
Yeah.
And har jage, blue film dekhne chale. Aao chalo, blue film dekhne chalenge. It was so exciting to our 15-year-old minds ki hum publicly bol rahe hain, hum blue film dekhne ja rahe.
Yeah, it's like this universal code, because even in my school, it used to be called Blueprint. For some reason.
Why though?
And then the word BP became synonymous with a porn CD. So as you can imagine, when I went into medical college and achha BP check kiya tha, for the first couple of years, I had to rewire my brain.
Maybe it's called Blueprint because it gives you a blueprint on how sex is supposed to work and things like that. So
that is a very kind interpretation of that. Yes, the makers of Blue Films have our best interests at heart. I love it.
It's sexual education 101.
Yes. Thank you.
In what ways do you think porn lies to us? Let's put it this way.
Interesting question. Let's look at what porn is. It is a audio-visual representation of sex, right? Now, the reason that porn is so, it pulls you in, is because the motivation to sex is already there. The motivation towards going towards sex is already wired in everyone. And as even in school, as children grow up, you know, they are 13, 14, 15, those kind of thoughts have already started coming in. And porn is often the first window that they have towards that exposure. either audiovisual porn or erotica. So something that they read, they may be reading some novel. I remember, in fact, one of the first exposures of sex itself was through a Sidney Sheldon novel for me. It was, and it like quite frankly blew my mind. Like, what the hell was happening? Because you don't really know about a lot of that stuff. So it's all in that same spectrum. The thing with porn films, though, is that it is so in your face that it kind of overwhelms you, especially if you're a kid. It just overwhelms all of your senses, and then it can get super addictive super fast without you really knowing why. So you feel all of those things. You're too young to understand what is going on. All you know is that you kind of want to keep going back to it. And that is the danger. That is the most inherent danger of porn exposure when you are in school or in junior college.
So does that mean that a younger brain is more susceptible to the vices of porn that way?
Yes, it is. I think that's a great way of putting it. When you are young, you are already struggling with a lot of things, trying to understand sex itself. You're trying to understand your own sexuality. You're trying to understand what is your relationship with your own body. And sometimes porn can force feed certain concepts into you before you are ready for it, before you've, you know, even thought about it. Yeah. So then if that becomes your baseline, then it's an issue. Otherwise, nothing in porn is inherently good, bad, or evil. But then if something becomes your baseline without you being consciously aware that this is now becoming my baseline, that is an issue.
And especially if you've never actually experienced it, you know, you get such a warped idea of what sex and, you know, physical intimacy is meant to be like. Yeah. I remember the first time I saw porn, it's a really dumb story.
No porn stories are dumb.
Fair point. It was back in the day of Yahoo Messenger chat rooms.
Oh, good times.
The golden era. I was in some big chat room. It was a chat room full of Delhi kids, because of course. Mm-hmm. And some kid is like, I mean, I always love dog videos now. So, bahut hi matlab dog videos, ke, if you're a lover, it's, a, it's the golden era of being a dog video lover. But back then, itne nahi milte the. Right. So somebody was like, very cute dog videos, puppy videos, kitten videos. I should have got the message then. You should check out this cute link that has all of these dogs. And it redirects me to sexocean.com. Zindagi mein kabhi wo neela rang ka page mein bhulungi nahi. Because the thing is, normally, you know, back in the day, websites used to take a while to load up. Aise aadha, 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 aadha karke banta tha. For some strange reason, my internet was blazing fast that day. And I'm just, you know, in my face, the first thing, like you mentioned, it's very visceral, your reaction to it. In my face, there's just like these countless images of very graphic and very hardcore pornography.
Oh, God.
It blew my mind, and I was like, of course, I was overwhelmed and, you know, scared of what was happening, but then also I was very curious.
Yeah.
Like, kya hai ye? Maine pehle kabhi kyun nahi dekha hai? What is this corner of the internet hiding? And then I got into it. So, what I'm quite interested to think about is that it took me, I must have been, I think 13 or 14 when I saw it for the first time. And I have been an internet kid. Mere ghar mein bahut chote umar pe internet lag gaya tha. I was always, you know, playing games or reading stuff on the internet. It took me at least a good 5-6 years to discover this side of the internet. Mm. Whereas in contrast now, everybody has access to porn. Even, you know, your youngest viewers, a lot of parents that I talk to tell me that their kids have been exposed to porn and they're as young as like 6 years or 8 years. So how does that impact your development, really?
This is a very interesting question. The brain, from the moment of birth, in fact, even before, is on a continuous development spectrum. It keeps developing and it develops upwards, so to speak. So the lowermost parts of the brain develop first and the uppermost parts of the brain develop last. The uppermost part is the prefrontal cortex. That is the most evolved, logical, rational part of the brain. That is a part of the brain that helps you calculate and take really cool decisions about 30 years into the future, you will do this. So all of those things, okay, the really grown up adult stuff, that doesn't complete its development till the age of around 24, 25. And in fact, it keeps developing. It's not like 25 is a line in the sand. It keeps on developing. at the age of six, your prefrontal cortex is pretty much in its infancy. So you don't really expect a six-year-old to be taking mature decisions. But that doesn't mean that a six-year-old doesn't think. That doesn't mean a six-year-old does not take decisions at all or make personality choices. The only question is, where is that decision coming from? Which part of the brain? And the answer is, it's coming from a very primitive limbic part of the brain, which is like an animal part of the brain. So it's very instinctive, it's very impulsive. And at that stage, if a certain decision-making pattern is fixed, then it would be much more difficult to change it later because it becomes a part of that person's personality, right? And things that we learn with our prefrontal cortex can be changed much more easily. But things that we learn at a very instinctive level, it becomes fixed. So that is one of the dangers of exposure to porn at that age, because then your sexual decision-making can get influenced quite deeply.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you think porn can literally change your likes? Is that what you're saying, that porn can impact and influence what you enjoy, what you think you might enjoy, what are culturally relevant tropes in terms of what is sexually attractive?
Right. Absolutely, it can, because all our sexual attractions are half story. It's all narratives that we create in our brains. So anything can be sexually attractive or anything can be sexually not attractive depending on the context that it is placed in. And so if a child is raised with a certain parameter of what is good and what is bad, then they will grow up that way. In fact, it's not true for just children. Even adolescents or even young adults or even grown-ups faced with this kind of predicament, that if the context changes, their turn-ons change. So the challenge is that when we're talking about a child's brain, changing it later is going to be that much more difficult, because then there are certain core truths that they may form. It's not a fixed thing, but the probability of them being influenced in a particular way, in a negative way, is much higher if they get exposed to it as a kid.
Is this why the teacher fantasy does so well?
There is unfortunately some truth in that, because this is a crazy, crazy story, okay?
I'm here for it.
I read this book called A Billion Wicked Thoughts. It's a book about 10 years of incognito searches the internet. So what are people into? What are people not into? Which group of people are into what? What perversions are going on around the world? And it is mind-blowing, literally mind-blowing, what people are looking for out there. No judgment, okay? No judgment. But there are searches for sexual representations of grandmothers out there, which are far more popular than you would think. And you started a podcast on porn. Now you finish it, okay? You don't get to squirm around. The most interesting thing was that the places that was searching for this kind of porn was in Britain and in one of the South African countries. The authors proposed this hypothesis that in Britain, the matron system is very active.
Oh, wow.
So young boys are kept under the care of matrons. And so the first time in their lives when they start getting sexual thoughts, they are most in contact with their matrons. And that becomes their sexual figure. And that is fascinating to me, because it's literally what you grow up with.
Sorry, I can't keep a straight face anymore. Or Oedipus complex, is this what is happening? So, okay, I understand Britain, but why that part of Africa?
So in that part of Africa, the grandmoms were responsible for the taking care of the grandsons. And in fact, in a much more forward way, they were responsible for the sexual development of their grandsons.
Excuse me?
So they would be the ones to tell their grandsons about what a woman needs and what kind of lovemaking should they be doing? So it's almost like passing on the wisdom of the tribe to the grandsons.
That's really cool.
It actually is. I mean, if you just step out of your own, you know, moral right and wrong, it's, in a way, it's why not? Somebody has to tell them.
And it's better coming from a woman who would understand that probably better.
Exactly. And somebody who's lived long enough and has all that experience and has all that wisdom of, you know, all the tribe, so to speak. So then they will grow up thinking that, okay, so this person is sexually experienced. So they have those kind of fantasies. I just find it very interesting. Again, no judgment. Search for what you want. But this is really, really cool.
No, but I really like that because, you know, I went into this conversation, this particular part of this conversation being very like, oh my God, how are they fantasizing about their grandmom? And then I heard the logic and I think that's beautiful, right? That yeah. We have, I mean, I bemoan the lack of sex ed all the time, but when there's actually, you know, some culturally relevant sex ed that's happening, that's sensible yeah. and it's traditional and it's normalized in a community like that, yeah. it's fascinating and it's so wonderful. Like, I mean, seriously, we need to put our judgments aside. What a call out. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Warrior.
No worries. So now you can go and search for whatever you want.
Fantasies are really interesting that way, and I feel like one of the most popular fantasies that I grew up learning about, har ladke ko bhai lesbian porn ka bada shauk hai. Is it this element of no competition? There's no dicks. I can't be, you know, like accidentally turned on and your inherent homophobia rising here.
That is a lot of questions pushed into one little
conversation. Oh no, thinking out loud. I'm not, no pressure. I remember reading about quote unquote lesbianism in forensic medicine in second year of medical school when I was like, I must have been what, 18, 19 years yeah. old. Bacche the, bahut impressionable dimag tha. I learned about it in a chapter on sexual perversions.
Yeah.
And in the same paragraph, they talked about necrophilia, which is sexual attraction to dead people and dead bodies,
yeah.
which just goes on to show how warped our sense of morality and the idea of anything deviating from the norm is in terms of the way we think of sex. And of course, I think at this point, homosexuality was criminalized in India, yet one of the most popular porn categories still happened to be lesbianism, quote unquote.
Mm.
I think this is a very common question in a lot of women as well, that a lot of straight women say that they really enjoy watching gay porn or mm-hmm. things like that. So what would be the neurobiology of something like this be like? How is it? Is it novelty? Is it the female gaze? What do you think it is?
So female gaze is in itself a fascinating topic, like male gaze and female gaze. How society conditions us to look at certain things as sexual and certain things as non-sexual. Like the idea of the cleavage being a very sexual thing in every movie, in every serial. That norm has kind of perpetrated all of pop culture. And you can tell that even if it's a female director, for example, if she also does it in that particular way, you can talk about how the male gaze has perpetrated to that extent. When you talk about lesbian stories or lesbian videos, the one thing that you said that hit me really hard was the novelty of it. When you've grown up thinking that sex looks and is a particular way, anything novel is exciting. That is primarily our sexual exploratory tendencies. The brain rewards us for exploring sexual fantasies.
Very cool.
Because we don't really go, or at least the limbic system doesn't really go into the intricacies of it. All it knows is that, okay, so there is a sexual idea here, and it equates all new sexual ideas with exploring new sexual partners, which is inherently a rewarding thing. Because at a tribal level, or even at an animal level, you are increasing your tribe. You're bringing in new people into the tribe. So that is inherently a good thing. So all sexual exploration is rewarded. And anything new, if it is non-threatening, uh-huh. is good. So that's, I think all of our sexual so-called quote-unquote perversions are a variation of exploring new sexual fantasies. That's why it feels good. But at the same time, there's a comfort level. So if it's too outside of the comfort level, then it's not good. It has to be just outside of the comfort level. That's when it's most fun.
This is very interesting, especially because for a lot of people nowadays, at least, even the most generic porn is quite hardcore. So even
explain. What do you mean? What is generic porn anymore? That's what I meant. Where do you draw the line at generic porn?
Interesting question.
Because
like
everything
it.
Is so easily available, and it's just everything is just one click away.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can define anything as generic porn anymore.
And I feel like as humans, we've never had this kind of access to these kind of images and these kind of texts and audios. And like you said, at the click of a button, you have it there. Yeah. The accessibility, I remember pehle, you know, people would cut out things from magazines. Matlab lingerie ka brochure hai. You know, you keep it under your bed for months and that's the only thing you have.
Right.
Because there's nothing else you can find or watch. I like how porn has almost made it democratic. It's made orgasms and it's made sexual exploration so much more accessible for people, which is so wonderful. I mean, we still see orgasms and masturbation and, you know, sex through a very, not a pleasant lens, I would say, for a lot of people. But even then, you know, just to be able to have orgasms on demand. It's so wonderful. I love it.
It is, of course. Who doesn't like orgasms? Of course. The idea, though, is porn is not a new thing. It's just the distribution of porn at this massive global scale is new. But erotica has always existed. Always.
Tell me more.
All of human societies, all across the world, throughout time, has always had some form of erotic representation. From cave art onwards, you know, through stories, through songs, through poems. In fact, some of the raunchiest stuff ever written were written in perfect iambic tetrameter poems. So it was like that. So at whatever level of civilization you are at, there is always a way of expressing something sexually which is considered the right amount of taboo.
Interesting.
And that's what porn is.
And do you think modern porn has pushed that line of what is taboo?
Absolutely. Because now, very honestly, it's difficult to label anything as outright taboo.
Hmm.
You know, that is illegal.
Hmm.
But if you don't cross the illegal line, is anything taboo anymore? It's a very interesting thought. But porn itself is not new. Orgasms are not new. People have always found ways to have something representing sex. When they don't have access to sex itself, they will have something that represents sex. And that in itself is enough to trigger fantasies, to trigger sexual thoughts, and to masturbate, and to have orgasms. You don't really need an internet connection.
Very true. I mean, people without internet also masturbate.
Yes, and I think they might be masturbating better because...
Better cognitive abilities.
You are imagining it. Right. So one of the drawbacks of porn, according to me, is that it leaves no space for imagination.
Mm.
You have to see what is shown.
I would argue that it does leave a lot of space of imagination because there's no way in hell that somebody gets stuck in a washing machine and says, oh, I can't get out.
What porn are you watching? What?
Have you not seen this meme?
No.
Oh, I'm stuck. It's a very common meme. It's a meme. It takes a lot of imagination.
I'm imagining it right now and thank you for that.
You're very welcome. I am a connoisseur after all.
Oh, wow. It's funny how a podcast on porn turns into a porn podcast. Yeah, so it's porn itself is not new, but the accessibility to porn, the ease with which anyone now with a phone can access porn is a problem. The anonymity, I feel, is a problem where there's no trace who you are and what you're watching. And since we are talking of the negative aspects of porn without demonizing porn entirely, the third one would be the lack of accountability. No accountability. There's nothing. So you could be watching something that you're ashamed of watching and nobody would know. And instead of dealing with the shame, we hide behind the anonymity and the lack of accountability. So that, I think, is an issue. What sex education should hopefully do is to remove the shame of having certain thoughts so that we don't need to hide it so much. We don't need to be ashamed of it, because otherwise it's a very dark space. Because now what happens is that not only are you exposed to sexual thoughts, but you're also giving credibility to the guilt that I am this way, but I shouldn't be this way. Now, that is a terrible combination, you know. So I think that is what porn kind of encourages in today's times. And that's dangerous.
I understand and appreciate where you're coming from. And I feel that we probably need to highlight this a little bit more, especially in an era where we so often talk about addiction to pornography. And I have a question here, which I'm personally very conflicted with, because a porn addiction is not a recognized addiction, really, medically. So there is no mention of it in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is like a textbook that psychologists and psychiatrists use to maybe study and categorize mental illnesses. So in that similar vein, I have personally, from a lot of other therapists and sex educators, constantly have heard that, you know, porn addiction isn't a real diagnosis. So how about that? Like,
it is an issue, definitely, because for the longest time we were struggling with the taboo around it. So if the scientific community is itself dealing with the taboo, then, you know, the rest of the world doesn't really stand a chance. So some things are changing. I think the community is accepting it a lot more now. There is a diagnosis now on hypersexuality disorder. So that includes certain topics that weren't covered before, like, for example, compulsive masturbation. Mm. There was so much controversy and, you know, misunderstandings around, is masturbation okay, not okay, what is it? So religion had a lot to say around it. Social taboos had a lot to say around it. So now compulsive masturbation is a diagnosis. It is part of hypersexuality disorder. Similarly, there is a term called problematic porn consumption. What we are trying to do here is to kind of differentiate porn from problematic porn consumption. Mm-hmm. So we are not trying to villainize porn consumption overall, which is what the issue is. No, sometimes we have to have that nuance.
Yeah.
We are not saying sex is bad, but then too much of anything is bad.
Yeah.
So hypersexuality disorder is when you are so obsessed with sex and sexual thoughts that you can't function properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an issue. So similarly, porn itself may not really be the problem, but then if you have a problematic level of porn consumption, that can actually ruin your life, and then you do need therapy to get out of it.
And I'm so glad we're actually talking about this, because there is not this level of detail that you can cover in a reel. And the nuance is so important in this conversation. But, you know, because we've been talking about something so serious and my brain can't handle it. I must ask you something inappropriate. I'm not saying we have the numbers on this. What do you think is the most widely consumed category of porn in India?
In India?
Yes.
Wow. So I think lesbianism would always be popular, irrespective of the country. Like you said, I think that holds true. I don't know about India specifically, but since I read that book, my entire worldview, my point of view has changed around porn and genres. So people tend to gravitate towards one end of the age spectrum. So, you know, you either fantasize about being with somebody on the younger side or on the older side. For me, the way to look at this is people want deviation from the norm.
Mm.
So if you assume, for conversation's sake, that the norm is a heterosexual couple in a monogamous relationship having sex in a missionary position. Let's label it that way.
You've just described the sex life of a lot of the world right now.
Exactly, which is why it's the norm. Fair.
Thanks.
That's
the joke.jpg. Thank you.
So then, I'm sorry I attacked you, Tanya.
It's okay, I'll let it pass this one time.
Any deviation from this can be exciting. So you change any one variable in this entire line. So you have two men instead of man and women. You have two women instead of man and woman. You have two men and one woman. Or you have two women and one man. Any combination there. You change the monogamous part of it. So it's a man and woman, but they're cheating. They're not married. Oh, interesting, exciting. They are doing it in some other position. Oh, interesting, exciting. You know, one of them is really older than the other one. One of them is really younger than the other one. One of them is interracial, whatever. So it's all, any deviation from this line can spin into a story which has sexual potential.
This can be a really interesting party game. But okay, science me up here. Why is novelty...
That is so hot.
Yes. Why is novelty so exciting to the human brain? What is it about novelty that it turns us on, so to speak?
So we spoke about this a while ago, so we'll go a little deeper into it, okay? That's what they said on a podcast. So the brain is wired, and I'm talking human brains, monkey brains, animal brains. The brain is wired to look for sexual opportunities. Okay, and this is part of a much bigger wiring for looking for opportunities overall. So you're wired to look for a better place to find food. You're wired to look for, you know, everywhere, if you are looking for opportunities, your brain rewards you. And your brain rewards you if you take risks. And if that gamble pays off, there is a huge reward. So in terms of sex, if you're looking for new sexual partners, it is exciting. So it's a turn on. If you find a new partner, it is exciting. It is a turn on. So you've successfully completed that neural transaction in your head. What porn does is it makes you think that you are exploring sexually. And it makes you think that you have succeeded in your sexual exploration. Because it's a narrative. So when you're, and that's what all movies do, actually. It's not just porn. Like, you know, when you watch a movie of, Chak De India, for example, and so they win the match and you feel like you have won the match. And you feel that excitement. You feel that stress. Porn does that. So when you're watching porn, you, because of our natural empathy circuits in our brain, you are one of those characters in the film and you feel what they are feeling. And so you are experiencing all of those things and your brain rewards you because great, you know, you explored with somebody else, you tried something new and here's a lot of dopamine for you. Khush re, you are amazing, you are awesome, you are a sexual god or goddess.
People are having a really happy, good time listening to this podcast, I'm assuming.
How happy?
Asking the important questions. Actually, on a similar vein, since you mentioned dopamine, tell me about dopamine addiction.
Looking at a hot girl or boy and approaching them or thinking about approaching them, that is the spike of dopamine. Wanting to open up a porn site and watch it, like that is where dopamine is there. So that's why sexual thoughts will keep coming to you because dopamine is wired that way. So there is a certain amount of truth in that you do need to stop these addictive behaviors that are, and they are addictive because of dopamine. Mm-hmm. That does not mean that you need less dopamine in your brain, which is why the term dopamine fasting is absolutely wrong. Mm-hmm. You can't have that. If you don't have dopamine, you end up with a disease called Parkinson's, where you can't move, you can't talk, you know, your hands are shaking and you lose your, you can end up in mental health problems, depression, gut problems, all of it, because dopamine is like a life-saving drug. So you need dopamine, but how do you channelize it is the issue.
Recently, I came across, you know, not like full high production quality wala porn. I recently learned about something called ASMR porn. You need a setup exactly like this, like this little chotusa studio with a nice little mic, with a nice little condenser, and that's all you need, and you can be making high quality porn. But how the hell does this work? What is ASMR? How does it play with our brains? And how are people getting off to this?
So ASMR is super fascinating. It's a physical reaction to something that you hear, and we have all felt it. You know, if you've heard chalk on a blackboard, yeah, for example, right? And there are certain sounds that you hear, and your the hair on your arms can just stand up. If there is a song that you love, and you are finally hearing that band play it live, that kind of tingling sensation that you get. So all of those things are part of ASMR. So audio leading to sensory feelings, sensory sensations. The reason this happens is because when your brain takes in a particular sound, the networks in your brain can sometimes get overlapped. And that sound can trigger both visual images. So when you hear, say, a kitten mewing, it doesn't take too long to have that visual image in your head, right? So how did that happen? A sound got converted into a visual image. Similarly, you can have sound triggering sensations. So when it comes to ASMR porn, if you are listening to, say, a girl talking very softly, very seductively, you might think that she's actually talking in your ear. And you might feel that sensation around your ear. If she's saying that, if she's, you know, touching your neck, you might actually feel that sensation on your neck, and so on. So the really good ASMR, and they call themselves ASMR artists. Overall, the ASMR group call themselves ASMR artists.
I love it.
Yeah, it's such a it's such a lovely term. And the ones who do erotic ASMR, they have like, they have some insane, you know, production kits. They have these kind of microphones that they can speak into alternatively so that you can only hear it on one ear.
Wow.
And so when they speak into one ear, one of the mics, you can hear it on one side and then the other. And they give you this kind of sense that they are surrounding you, and they tell you should close your eyes. If you haven't tried it, you should. It's really interesting.
Thanks for recommending. The doctor recommended porn, you guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I feel that every person should explore their own fantasies. I feel like everyone should explore whatever is there out there. If you're doing it like an adult, if you're doing it like a grown-up, sensibly, reasonably, then, hey, it's your body, it's your mind. Who's to judge?
I love it, actually. I feel like we need to have a separate episode on ASMR because this is a fascinating area and I'm loving hearing more about this. But because we must stop at some point, as much as I love this conversation, I feel like this will be the point where I will ask you to summarize the top things that people should know about porn in your brain.
Top things. I love how this becomes like an MBBS 10 mark question.
Listicles. This is what performs well on the internet, I have learned.
Okay, let's take it in this way. Things you need to know about porn. Porn has always existed. One, you don't need to feel guilty about wanting to watch porn because those networks in your brain are really, really, really old. And that urge for sex and sexual content has always been there. And to be sexually content. Number three, the way that the internet is designed and the way that the porn industry is designed is, in fact, to make you an addict. So you've got to remember that. It's no different from Netflix and Swiggy. Everyone wants your attention. So the way that the porn websites are arranged is also to keep you hooked. So if you are aware of that, that goes a long way into it. Porn addiction can happen to anyone. And if you think that it is happening to you, you should reach out for help. Do not feel ashamed. Do not feel guilty. Reach out for help. You live once, just for the same reasons that made you click on a website and explore your sexuality. For those same reasons, you should also stop clicking on it and go to a therapist because you need to be the best version of yourself.
Yay.
And number five, if you are doing all that and if you are in a healthy space and if you are functional and if you're able to do everything that you want to do, nothing wrong in exploring any fantasy that comes to your mind. So enjoy.
As long as it's legal.
As long as it's legal, absolutely. Stay safe, everyone.
In more ways than one. But thank you so much for coming here. This has been so fun and I'm so glad we chatted about this. Well, we talked about certain problematic concepts that tend to get lost in the lack of nuance on the internet. And this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Dr. Warrior.
Thank you, Tanya. This was super fun. Thank you so much.